Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hi everyone, it's obvious. I'm John Verhoeven, and I was a cop back in the 80s in Sydney.
And I'm Paul Verhoeven, John's son. I'm an author, and I wrote 2 books about Dad's time as a cop.
The first 5 seasons of Loose Unit spanned my time in general duties, forensics, my time as a firefighter, and even my stint running a funeral home.
This season, we're visiting the locations of Australia's most notorious, baffling, horrific crimes, and looking at what happened there.
From Snowtown to the family, from the Morehouse murders to haunted highways, this season of Loose Units is your go-to guide to the worst crimes in Australian true crime history.
Welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files.
Hello and welcome to Loose Units, The Shadow Files. This week we continue our look at the BTK killer. And last episode, we were dealing with the murder of Vicky Wergel, a 28-year-old mother of 2. Her husband was, for subsequent decades, if not blamed, at least suspected for the murder. Now, that was obviously in 1986, but in 1987, something happened that does pertain to this case, Dad. Around the end of the year, there was a very, very prominent murder that occurred in Wichita, and it was the murder of the Fager family. So it was the dad, Philip, and his 2 teenage daughters, and they arrested somebody, a contractor, in fact, who worked for them, I think on renovations of some sort. He was arrested in Florida, and he stole their car and used their credit card. His name was Bill Butterworth, and he was acquitted, but the police were like, look, he didn't do the murder. And then in 88, Mrs. Fager, who survived the murder of her family, got a letter from the BTK killer. Did you know about this?
No.
Okay, so he sends a letter to this woman whose family had been murdered saying he didn't do the murder, but that he admired the work of the murderer. Now, here's the thing. They didn't actually confirm that this was a BTK killer letter, but 17 years after this point, when he was, you know, they found a copy of the original letter with the rest of Raiders' stuff.
Wow.
And they found a picture that he'd drawn of the murder as he imagined it. He actually drawn one of the girls. It obviously wasn't accurate to the crime scene, so it discounted him from being involved. But essentially, he was a fan of this guy's work, which is deeply upsetting. Now, that same year, 88, Raider got fired from ADT Security. I had heard that he actually wanted to get fired. The company said that he wasn't getting enough work done. It's possible, Dad, that the reason he wasn't getting enough work done is that because he was spending so much time stalking people. And several of the people who worked with him said he was hard to work with, a little bit impersonal, a little bit unpleasant, but that he was very, and I quote, customer oriented. That is fucking dark. Someone else who worked with him said all he wanted to do was to be a cop, and that he was forced to settle for a job as somebody who installed security alarms, which isn't what he wanted. But at this point, he was in trouble work wise, didn't have much work going, and I think he was working for the Census Bureau around 89, but there were points in the early 90s where he was effectively unemployed.
So, working for the Census Bureau, what does that involve?
Oh, it involves knocking on doors and talking to people.
Correct.
Yeah, and going being effectively let into their houses, right?
Chummy, sitting in there. I remember census nights back in the 70s. The census people would come around, come into your home. We'd all gather around on a stormy night. and if it was stormy, of course. And can you imagine the information, aside from very, very personal questions they ask about religion, how many kids, how old, how many bedrooms in the house? They're sitting there. They're just looking around. If they wanted to, they could simply case the joint. And I guess, you know, lots of people, they end up in an occupation that enables them to live out their fantasies.
Yeah.
And Paul, before we keep going, I'd just like to say that you and Tegan, you're now in New York.
Yes, we are.
Any chance of going to Wichita? Or is that
Look, we don't have that much time, but also Tegan and I set a bit of a rule. There's a really great website called Atlas Obscura, which effectively gives you you click the near me button and it gives you a list by kind of location and proximity of interesting locations. And it's really great, strange stuff. I mean, hidden tunnels and the site where, you know, Marilyn Monroe's skirt blew up, or the all kinds of amazing, amazing hidden stuff. And there's a bunch of stuff threaded throughout this Obscura of, it doesn't get too grim, but occasionally you do get sort of true crime adjacent locations, iconic locations where crimes happened. And we both looked at each other, and after the year we've had and after the, you know, our tenure on Loose Units to date, we basically just went, you know what? Let's keep this true crime free. So I'm not going to go anywhere
good
true crime related on this trip.
Love it, love it. As long as you're both having a great time. I know that all the listeners are excited.
Well,
and you need a break.
It's the first holiday we've had in a while. So that's part of the reason we're rolling these episodes out automatically. But, Dad, let's tell you what. Okay, so let's skip forward to 1991. Now, in 1991, we're entering that weird period. We've been in it for a little bit, but where I actually have distinct memories of these times. I know that 92 was the Barcelona Olympics. I know where I went to school. I was at St. John's in Narrowena at this point. We were living... Where were we living in 91? At St. Luke's, up at the Anglican school? Is that 91?
Paul, we've lived in so many different places. It's difficult for me in the midst of this story to... Sometimes I can slip back, but this time I'm... I'm not sure whether this story's taken its toll. I'm normally pretty good at compartmentalizing. But this guy gets under my skin. And I keep saying this to you and the listeners, that this guy, he's still alive. He's sitting, he's breathing as we speak. And I mentioned it last week, that he's, on the balance of probabilities, he's probably just living off his memories.
Trophies, yeah.
And I'd like to read, Paul.
Yeah, okay.
For the listeners and you. Yeah. This is from a psychiatrist.
Okay.
And it says that psychopaths do not feel emotions the way normal people do. Consequently, when their guard is down, they may say or do things that reveal their lack of concern for others and their absence of conscience. This was the case when Radar described his victims as projects and calmly explained how he selected a victim, gave the project a code name, and then researched and stalked her until he found the right opportunity to attack. Radar is a very accomplished psychopath. His ability to carry on two very different lives attests to this. It was pretty cold. I shot from the hip very quickly, he told Larry Hattenberg of KAKE TV. Very compartmentalized. I can wear many hats. I can switch gears very rapidly. I can become emotionally involved, be cold at it. And then they went on to say that that kind of sounds like a resume. And of course, they also say that some psychopaths, because they are narcissists and self-centered, become very successful in business, government, and academia. A much smaller group, for lack of intelligence and self-control, become criminals. Of those criminal psychopaths, some become serial killers.
Okay.
It's so... Look, we all know. We get it. But because we've spent so long, you know, I try and... once we finish recording, I try and sort of switch off, but, you know... Occasionally, curiosity gets the better of me, and I guess that's why it's such an interesting case.
Yeah.
But we're about to talk about his. Well, is it? I mean, he's very, very clever. Once we've discussed Dolores, I'd like to talk about a few other cases
that could be him. BTK related. Okay. Well. Like I said before, 1991, and it seems to me, I mean, first of all, he's a coward, but his cowardice sort of reached this new interesting point where he did tend towards younger women, and a lot of these women were alone. Some of these women had men involved, and he clearly avoided situations where he would have any sort of opposition. Mm. It seems like with our next victim, Dolores Davis, that he has gone for someone even more vulnerable, i.e. an older woman who lived by herself.
Yeah.
Dolores was 62. She lived... I know we've talked a bit about the proximity, about the kind of hunting ground mentality that he had. You know, you look at where he lived and you look at where he stalked people. She lived just over a mile from his house.
Yes.
But as far as people could tell, they didn't know each other. She was a secretary, she was an executive secretary in Wichita, and she'd actually moved into that area after that job, and I think she'd retired at that point.
Yeah.
I'm not entirely sure. So she lived by herself. She was, you know, quite vulnerable. He clearly had established that she was single, that she was alone. And I'd like to know, Dad, about how this... I mean, I wouldn't like to know, but I want to know how this murder went down.
Okay. Well, midwinter in Wichita. Absolutely freezing night. Later on, Dennis said, when he was being interviewed by the police, he said it was so cold that night that I'd even contemplated not going through. I know that... Every single case we've discussed has got some things about it that are very distressing.
Yeah.
But there's something about this particular case that makes me feel sad.
It's odd because he's about 45 at this point, right? Like, he's in his mid-40s, but he's not... As far as I'm aware, he's not in the guise of any sort of professional this time, is he? He's not knocking on doors. He's not in disguise. He's not...
He was actually... This is reminiscent of another case, Paul, where on this particular occasion, he's actually at a scout event.
He isn't. Is he?
Yes. Yep. And he needs to leave the event because once he becomes fixated...
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of groundwork involved with a lot of premeditation. And, you know, it starts off, something happens where he sees a particular person, not quite sure what it is, but something begins that sort of ever diminishing focus on a particular victim, and he becomes obsessed. He can't let it go. He begins to create, fantasize, plan, and he goes through all the different stages, and then I don't know what happens to him. He's at this scouting event, and he gets the desire. He leaves the scouting event, changes clothing, approaches the house, but he knows that there's no way he can actually get into the house. It's very, very late at night. Dolores is asleep. All the lights are off. He goes to the back of the house. He's cased the joint big time. trying to figure out how am I going to get in. And then he does something that to me is very out of character. And this must have been a very, very quiet neighborhood. But the houses must have been well spaced from each other, because what he does next is quite bizarre. He picks up a Besser block. A Besser block is about maybe 4 or 5 times the size of a normal house brick.
Yep.
And he simply hurls it through the rear sliding door. He just smashes.
So am I thinking this is basically a cinder block?
Cinder block.
Okay.
Massive.
Yeah, yeah.
He throws it.
He just throws a brick through the window. Okay. So...
And he's carrying, by the way,
yeah,
not one, but 2 firearms. Okay?
Okay.
He stands there. He walks through the broken glass.
And what does he...
Dolores...
So she presumably... Wakes up. What does he say to her? Does he attempt to...
Before he says anything to her, she's in bed.
Yeah.
She thinks, and there's only one way we can know this, and she must have relayed this to Dennis Rader.
Mm-hmm.
She must have said to him that she thought a car had run into the back of her house.
Mm.
That's how loud it was. How no one nearby heard anything is unbelievable.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Well, I guess, you know, when we're, you know, in the wee hours of the morning, if you're fast asleep and you hear something, I mean, how many people get out of bed? Well, you know.
It was extremely, extremely, extremely late one night when, during COVID actually, when a Uber driver who was looking at his phone, COVID was dead quiet. And we're in a first floor apartment in a big apartment block right near the, like, next to the road. Our car is parked on a main road, on Turek Road, actually. And the Uber driver takes his eyes off the wheel for his phone to check his phone, which the cops found out later on. And he hits our car at full speed and basically tears the side off it. Now, I think it was about, we'd been in bed for about an hour. We were half asleep. We were, you know, drifting off. And that sound, it was like a spaceship crashing. It was so quiet. And we rocketed out of bed, as did every single other person in the building. So if I heard something being thrown through my fucking window, through a plate glass window, and then because of the size of the cinder block, you'd hear it hit the ground. It would leak, you know. I would, oh shit, would I get up? I mean, would I, what would you do? Granted that you live in a small, small studio apartment, so if something got thrown through the window, it's probably getting thrown onto you. But, you know, what would your reaction be?
Well, you'd become instantly awake. The adrenaline would course through your veins, that fright or flight, you know, reaction that you have no control over. And, look... You know, I guess
what I'd do is that I'd go out the front door, go out downstairs and try and come around where I thought the incident had been instigated and try and just see whether there's someone there.
Right.
And then, you know, would I grab a knife? No. No, I wouldn't. If I thought it was heavy, I'd hopefully have my mobile with me.
Okay.
And just call 000. But if it was a spontaneous thing not related to, if in other words, if just a sort of a malicious act, but not aimed at us, just at breaking a window, the people have gone.
Yeah.
But it'd wreck your night, wouldn't it?
What if you live by yourself? What if you were a 62-year-old woman who lived by herself? You'd be shitting yourself. By the way, I know there's been gaps between the kills. In a town where terrible things happen to women.
I don't think you'd be thinking about the BTK killer.
Okay.
Not having a cinder block thrown through your back door.
All right.
I think that'd be the last thing. She comes out of her bed, gets out of bed, comes toward the back door, and she sees Dennis Rader standing there. He's got a gun, and he basically takes her at gunpoint back into her bedroom, where he strangles her. And loath as I am to mention this at this particular point, but I'm going to, because listeners, this is so fucked up.
Okay.
What he has with him as part of his kit,
yeah,
is a mask. And the mask, he's hand painted.
Ew.
He's given it a beautiful skin tone colouring.
Oh, God.
He has overly accentuated the lips with red lipstick. And the reason he did this, and this goes to show us the level of his depravity and planning, is that he felt, from a sexual gratification perspective, that Dolores was not attractive enough. So after he murders her, he places the mask over her face.
Right.
He then masturbates, which is really, really sad.
With what was he? What did he bring something with him, or did he strangle her with? Because I know he uses different things each time.
He does. Part of his murder kit.
Yeah.
He has cords, as we've mentioned. But sometimes he uses negligees, stockings is a favorite. Because if you get a stocking and wrap each end around your hands, I defy you to be able to break it. It's incredibly strong. And he strangled her. But once the victim, Dolores, is deceased, that's when he starts that's when he really ratchets up his
trophy hunt.
He's got his Polaroid camera.
Yeah.
He takes photographs. He as we've discussed in previous podcasts, he poses her. Now, we don't need to be Einstein to imagine what posing entails. But the mask thing is quite hideous. Now, I think it's at this a good time, Paul, to talk about the mask.
I can see a photo of it right now. Unfortunately, I've actually just seen a bunch of autopsy photos, which is not something I normally do. I did accidentally stray into them, but the discarded mask is... Oh, God.
It's bad. But, Paul, listen, this is really important. He would take clothing...
Yeah.
From the victims.
Right.
They all had code names because he needs to be able to, if he's in a fantasy type mood, and I don't know how often he had these occasions to relive these experiences, but he's got the photographs. But one of the things that he did that was so terrible, and he, it's hard to sort of even talk about what he did, but that same mask that he used to cover Dolores' face, he would then later dress up in her clothing and put the mask on his own face. But not only does he dress up and wear the mask, but they can see in various photographs he's actually imitating facial expressions depicting agony. So he is reliving what his victim suffered as he was strangling them, and he's photographing himself in all, like, writhing in pain.
That's. Have you seen these photos?
No, I haven't seen. How on earth did you find those photos?
I made some mistakes. I was in... The internet is a very dark, strange place.
Hmm.
It's... Yeah, it's no good. So after he does this murder...
He wraps her up, takes her,
mm-hmm.
and bundles her in her car. And he takes her to a location, but it's not the final location. Because remember, Paul, he has to go back to the scout festivities. And he has the intention of ultimately going back to Dolores' body, then taking her to her final resting ground.
Speaking of which, I've also seen the sketch that Raider did of her just before she dies. So it's a... Again, I think these... Look, the sketches I'm seeing look like photographs of screen caps. So I think what's happened is at some point in the 90s, there's been some sort of America's Most Wanted and they've showed these on the screen and somebody's quickly snapped them. But suffice to say, he's actually really, like we said, he's not just storing trophies. He is, as you mentioned before, storing memories and finding ways to lock these things in so he can enjoy them later on. And one of these is he's literally got a sketchbook. He's drawn her kind of tied up on the bed with the stocking around her. And she looks like she's handcuffed. And I did actually read a few mentions of handcuffs. But I also read that Dolores told him that someone was going to be there soon. Right? Mm. So I think at that point he rushes, chucks her in the trunk. And where does he leave the body?
It's on some sort of... well, not the final location.
I read that he put it in the trunk, right? And then he drives to this lake and leaves the body there with a bunch of other evidence.
Yep.
And then he heads back to the house.
He has to go back to the house because what did he lose? He lost something.
Did he?
He lost his gun. He realized he had two guns.
Right.
He realized that he'd lost one of the guns. He goes back to the house many hours later. He goes round to the back of the house. No police.
Mm.
I mean, it's a ballsy thing to go back to the scene of a crime. And on the back patio, down at his... He looks down and there's his gun. He collects his gun, goes back inside.
Oh, he wiped... He did like a... He took fingerprints off everything. He wiped everything down.
Yeah, yeah.
But he'd used her car to take the body to the lake. So he drives back in her car and then he puts... He hurls the keys onto the roof,
He throws her car keys onto her roof, which is brilliant.
But he's still got his car there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He then hops in his car,
goes
back to the body, loads her into his car, then takes her to a location that...
It's under a bridge, right?
Under a bridge.
Yeah.
And he leaves her there.
So what he does then is he changes back into his scout uniform.
Yeah.
Heads back, acts like nothing's happened. Mm. And then the next night, because this scout thing is sort of a multi-night event.
Jamboree.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So the next night of the jamboree or whatever, he comes back to the same spot to do what, Dad?
To photograph her, to put the mask back on her face, to do what he does, to, you know, fantasize, to relive, to... Just do all the terrible things that he does. But then he notices that in the interim, some rodents and, you know, perhaps wild dogs or rats or something or other have been nibbling away at her. And he finds the scene of her face so distasteful that he just can't go ahead. He's repulsed by what the animals have done. They've basically desecrated her body in a way that he had not planned. And he leaves her. Unbelievable.
Mm.
Just another level of bizarre depravity. And her body is found, I think it's about 11 days after.
Right.
Because he knew all the places in the town to, dispose of bodies. He didn't go to great lengths.
Actually, there's two more things I'd like to mention, Dad, before we get to the discovery of her body. And that is that when he was interviewed at court, Rader says he had a run-in with a cop at one of the spots where he was changing clothes between his normal activities and interfering with the body. But after a few questions that didn't go anywhere, they let him go. And we can't really blame the cop for that because, you know, Rader was very good at evading things at this point. But at some point between the murder and when he stopped kind of interfering with the body, he took a photo of himself in a grave that he dug for her.
Correct.
Wearing... I'm looking at the photo right now. It looks like the mask, but he had rigged a Polaroid camera up with a kind of cord that would activate. I mean, I've used a Polaroid many times. It's got a sort of press switch, so he's rigged up some sort of device. So he's hopped into a grave. Maybe he felt like he'd missed his chance to get a photo of her in that pose. Maybe he wanted to kind of feel what she felt, but it's a really upsetting Polaroid, and I'm looking at it right now, unfortunately.
Paul, it is very upsetting, and here's something else you mentioned. He was spoken to by police. Mm-hmm. He was on a scout jamboree once, and he was in a tent. He had bound himself up. He was a real master with rope. He even managed to drag himself, and it looked as though he was hanging by the neck, but he'd constructed the rope to sort of support his body, looking as though he was hanging by the neck. He would then hoist himself up a tree and have himself photographed. Have you seen any of those photos?
No, I've not.
Unbelievable. And he was almost, he tied himself once into such a complicated array of knots, and he was in a tent on a scout jamboree, and he could hear people coming towards the tent, and he absolutely was panicking because he almost got caught sort of in this situation of being tied up.
This weird costume bullshit. Yes. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
And he'd done the knots so well that he couldn't undo them, a little bit like Harry Houdini.
Mm.
But he managed to just in time get rid of the knots and sort of untie himself. But he was just completely fucking out there.
I'm looking at his employee photo, by the way, because shortly after this, I think a couple of months after the murder of Dolores, he was hired as the park ranger and animal control person that we talked about in the very first episode of this look at the BTK killer. We talked about his employment history, what kind of a person he was throughout the years, what people thought of him, and we've now reached that point. And I am looking at this employee photo, and you would not think this guy is a serial killer based solely on this photo.
Agreed.
But as we'd established in that episode, he had a pretty bad reputation, and he did some pretty sketchy stuff. We are, by the way, about to enter an entire episode talking about him being caught. So if you've been sitting here for the past, you know, four odd episodes of our look at the BTK killer going, when the fuck is justice going to come landing on this guy? Well, it's next episode. So next episode, we're going to look at what happens and how he's caught. And it's a fascinating story because there is so much evidence and there is so much disturbing stuff that comes out about him. Watching the community sort of collapse as it realizes this guy that's been living amongst them, and then there's his family to deal with, and then there's just so much more to do. But we're going to close it all up in one more episode looking at how they caught the BTK killer. So my sincere thanks for being with us through our look at the murder of 10 innocent people by one Dennis Rader. That's it. That's all the victims. We've looked at all 10 victims, at least the 10 victims that are on the record. We've talked through court transcripts. We've talked about his strange fetishes, his methods, everything. And next week, we're going to look at how they caught him. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Loose Units, The Shadow Files. We'll see you soon for more Loose Units. Bye, folks.
Cheerio.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.